Good morning. Welcome to the September 18th, 2023 meeting of the Chelan Public Utilities Commission. All five commissioners are present, and our regular staff of Kirk Hudson, General Manager, Rebecca Newman, Clerk of the Board, and Eric Walquist, our counsel, General Counsel, are also present. I would ask that all of you check your electronic devices to make sure that they are placed in the silent mode to assist in not disrupting in today's meeting. We value public input at our meetings, and we will be providing an opportunity for the public to have input at the end of our morning session. And by the way, it's good to see members of the public here this morning. We ask that you provide your name and address for the record as our meetings are recorded, and we wish to have an accurate record of your input. We additionally ask that you limit your comments to 3 minutes. In addition, if you wish to speak to any of the agenda items today, I'll provide an opportunity for that at the end of each segment. Our flag salute and safety minute will be brought to us by teams today by Chuck Boss. And we're all standing, Chuck.
Well, I thank you, sir. We'll start us off. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America
and to the republic for which it stands,
one nation
under God,
indivisible,
with liberty
and justice for all.
Thank you. We weren't very good at following on that, but we got there.
We ended the same time.
The round. Yes.
Thank you, and you're on.
Okay. Well, thank you, everybody. So my name's Chuck Boss, and I'm one of the construction managers down at the Rock Island Dam, and I serve on a team of people that help to supervise the rehabilitation of Unit U5 in Powerhouse 2. I'm here to talk to you a little bit about our energy isolation and lockout tagout program today and some of the cool changes that we made in order to make the U5 rehabilitation a success. Rebecca, please, let's go to the next slide. So at a high level, this energy isolation lockout tagout guide that's in front of you is our program for the protection of all workers from any sort of stored energy, whether it's hydraulic, pneumatic, electrical, any of that kind of stuff. This is the program that we use so that each worker is entitled to their own protection. So next slide, please. For the U5 rehabilitation, the job was so big and there were so many numbered safety tags and there were so many measurements that needed to be taken, we ended up having to break the clearance up into two different bites. We did one major exterior clearance that included head gates, stop logs, generator disconnects, all the big stuff, and then a smaller interior clearance so that we could run injection pumps and, you know, things of that nature for taking wicket gate reads, all of the measurements that we needed to take in order to give the engineers they needed to do a quality engineering job. So this is the tool that we use to do that. Next slide, please. Because the inside of those machines is kind of a scary, nasty place to get to, we devised a written procedure that we submitted to the lockout tagout committee in order to use a video program so that we could see in real time the protections that were applied for the worker, the position of any disconnects or valves or any of that kind of stuff. And it also gave feedback to our operators so that they could see that the workmen had signed on to their clearance. So they'd actually applied their interest to the workman's copy. Next slide, please. So this is kind of what the system looked like. We ran these wires all over the place, and we had cameras down in the unit and down at the controls for all of the things that we needed to open and close. You know, next slide, please. So in that photo, you see those two men are down inside a U5, and the disconnects that they have interest in are all the way down at the bottom of the dam, all the way down on the nearly to the bedrock. And so for them to climb up out of that machine and go down there and apply their protection down there was going to take 45 minutes each time. And this had to be done over 800 times. So the operator that's on the right-hand screen can see the guys on the left when they sign on, and the guys on the left can see the protection going on the right, and that way they could keep working. Let's go to the next slide, please. So you can see, those are some of the sign on and off pages that we had to maintain in order to get all these measurements taken for everybody. But it took 4 months, but at the end of it, we were able to modify the lockout tagout program and successfully get everybody through it so we could work. That's all I have for you this morning. Rebecca, thank you again for your help getting my slides in there.
Thank you.
If anybody has any questions or concerns, I'd be happy to take them.
Thank you, Chuck. That was impressive. Any questions from commissioners?
Chuck, I think it'd be good to explain that, you know, on anything like this, of course, you want the maximum protection for the employees. And something like this approach with this procedure, and it'd be helpful to explain, and you touched on it, but it'd be really good to explain the other risks that were mitigated as a result of taking this approach. And you might just talk about the employees and what they have to do to get down to that spot back and forth multiple times, just so that they have a feel for that.
Sure. So it wasn't just the time that we were saving. It was there's a bunch of risk because, you know, those machines are made to be underwater and running. They're not made to be occupied by humans, right? So the space to get down there, there's a lot of ladders. There's a lot of climbing around. You have to go down very narrow vertical shafts in order to get down in there. So you lose a bunch of time climbing up in and out of there, but there's also the risk of hurting people. You know, it is a confined space. And, you know, the confined space procedures that the district runs these days are very conservative. They're very effective. And in this way, we were able to maximize the amount of time that the guys got to spend in there taking the measurements that the engineers needed.
Thanks, Chuck.
Okay. Thank you so much. Any questions?
Thank you, guys.
Chuck, I just want to thank you for that. That was very impressive. And it is good to have a safety minute that is coming from our operations more than just the outside. It gives me a whole new perspective and appreciation. So thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you, guys.
Yeah. And thanks.
Appreciate your time.
Thanks again. All right. So, commissioners, I would normally move to item 2, approval of the agenda, but I'm going to ask for your forbearance for a few minutes. Today is a historic day in this meeting, as it will be the last meeting that we as the commission meet here in this building. And in preparation for that, Kirk and I were talking, and Kirk suggested that I might want to take a moment to pause and reflect on what's happened in this building. And most of the people in this room, maybe all, know a former employee by the name of Wayne Wright. Kirk connected with Wayne last week and asked if he would help me put together some comments reflecting on the history of this building. And I'd like to share those with you at this time. And I'm so glad there's a lot of the public here, because this is, it's worth hearing, I think. There's a lot of history in this old building. Over 100 years ago, on this land, there was once Piper's Natatorium, a public swimming pool which opened to the public around 1915. I had no clue. That opening line just blew me away. On September 5, 1955, Chelan County PUD moved into its new central headquarters building at this location, with the auditorium opening on the 18th of October. So nearly 68 years ago to the day we moved into this building. This spot has a lot more than one connection to public service. It's amazing to think about that 1915 public pool connection and what potentially the future may hold. As we move to our new service center in Old Station, it's my honor to offer a few comments about this complex and its legacy of service to our customer owners. The list is long and the time is short, but here's a few comments of note. Let's talk about people. First, let's talk about us commissioners. This building has been home to many elected PUD commissioners. As a matter of fact, I went out and did a count on the wall this morning, and of the current 31 commissioners counting us, there's been 26 that served before us. Only 3 of those did not serve in this building. 23 previous commissioners served in this building, each one representing a hallmark of public power and local control, the right to vote for those that oversee its operation. This building's been the home to many general managers with many skill sets and leadership qualities. Appointing a general manager, as we all know, is one of the most important jobs we have. Of our 13 managers, Kirk being number 13, 10 have served in this building. This building, along with our other operations location, has become home to an extraordinarily long list of talented employees, among the best in their fields of finance, electric utility operations, dam building and operations, strategic thinking and public service. Add in fish and wildlife and parks, water, wastewater system, and fiber operations, and so much more. Employees who serve our customer owners with pride, going the extra mile to get the job done, guided by our core values. That will never change as we move to our new facility. On this site, long-term power contracts were negotiated and signed, making it possible for RPUD to own and operate three hydroelectric projects that produce roughly 2,000 megawatts of clean, renewable hydropower for the benefit of our customer owners. When the contracts expired, decision makers on this site developed a new power marketing strategy, providing still more benefit to all of our customer owners, including the long-planned retirement of nearly $1 billion in long-term debt. On this site, the PUD marketed Live Better Electrically, beginning in the 1950s. And I remember that campaign. I'd forgotten about it, but I do remember. Here on the corner of 5th and Wenatchee Avenue in 1967, we joined the list of utilities that were members of the 1 cent club. And I think most of us probably remember that, but with a basic retail residential rate of 1 cent or less per kilowatt hour. Let's talk fish. In this building, the PUD developed a historic habitat conservation plan, the first of its kind for fish, which I can actually proudly say I played a small part in before I was a commissioner. And so that's a real thrill to me. The result, innovative projects like the fish bypass system at Rocky Reach Dam and the East Bank Hatchery combined to essentially make the dams invisible to migrating salmon and steelhead. The concept produces no net impact. It's a privilege to join my fellow commissioners in proudly being a part of these programs and many more. The PUD's strategic planning developed in this facility continues to provide still more benefits, including a major fiber optic build-out, 17 beautiful waterfront parks that are part of our federally issued operating license for our hydroelectric projects, and a world-class discovery center at Rocky Reach Dam, the hallmark of our education outreach. Finally, in this facility, countless public meetings have been held, including our commission meetings. Our open public meetings are yet another guiding principle of public power. So that's just a brief look and a few highlights at what happened at 327 North Wenatchee Avenue during the PUD's tenure here. Thank you for allowing me to walk down memory lane. And I can only imagine what will happen in the coming years in our new service center. And let's find out together. Thank you to Wayne Wright. And I understand, I don't know when the announcement's going to be made about refreshments, but it's some
right now.
But there, you will notice back here, there are some refreshments that can be, you can participate at your leisure, and they look really good. So commissioners, that's my walk down memory lane.
Thank you. That was great.
All right. So, item.
Oh, apropos the.
What?
The pool that was here. I didn't know.
I had no clue.
And now, what are we looking at? So, in the future here on this property, that's just amazing.
It's mind-boggling. Yeah. Absolutely mind-boggling. Yes.
So. Things come full circle.
Yeah.
Everything old is new again.
Yes. Yes. So, commissioners, item 2 on the agenda is the approval of the agenda. Is there any objection to the agenda as presented? Hearing none, it will stand approved. Item 3, PURPA hearing. Andrew Grissel and Jim White. I don't see Jim, but...
I'm here.
Oh, you're there. Okay.
Jim is gracious enough to come in. He's actually up in, I believe he's up in Alaska right now, having to do some family stuff.
Oh, wow.
He was calling in. He's going to be available for technical questions if any arise. So, thank you very much, Rebecca. Okay. Thank you. Good morning. My name is Andrew Grissel. I manage our customer energy solutions team here at Chelan County PUD. And I'm here to walk us through a public hearing for the purpose standards. 2 weeks ago, I provided the board and staff with our staff recommendations on whether or not we should adopt those purpose standards. Walked through the reasonings behind it, as well as the information and the details. And what I'll do is all that information is included within this package. I'll probably go through those items fairly quickly. But if you would like me to stop and pause on an area, just let me know, and we will.
Andrew, Mr. McKenna, just for the sake of those from the public listening to this on tape, would you explain what PURPA, what the term means?
Absolutely. Thank you. So an overview. So under the Federal Public Utility Regulatory Policy Act of 1978, this was put in place to help design energy efficiency, to help with ensure rates are implemented in a manner that is fair, just, and equitable. And over the years, it has been amended. And the last time was around 2007. And comes out a request for utilities to consider adopting standards. That's a consideration. It's not a mandate. And so what we do is we walk through the standards and see whether or not it makes sense for us to recommend to our governing board, commissioners, whether or not we should adopt those standards. And so it's the most recent one, PURPA, was amended in November 15th, 2021. We opened consideration last October, and over this last year, staff have been walking through the standards and have come to the board with our recommendation. The proposed PURPA standards cover two areas, electric vehicles and demand response. Each one shall consider measures to promote greater electrification of the transportation sector. And under the demand response, it says each utility shall promote the use of demand response and demand flexibility to reduce electricity consumption during periods of unusually high demand. So putting in place programs where we can look at when demand is high and shave those peaks. And then if you do those things under the standard, then also look at establishing rate mechanisms to recover the costs of those programs.
Is that why some utilities are considering time of day pricing?
Not just because of this. Some utilities have put that in place. Well, let me clarify the question. Is it just when you ask because of this, is it because of the
to reduce
the
peak load?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. I didn't know if it was because of PURPA or the so clarification. Yes. In general, most of them are to reduce that peak, and they can do so in a manner that aligns demand with the most expensive cost of resources, which is generally during that peak as well. So our staff recommendations that we provided to the board was not to adopt the electric vehicle and demand response standards described in the 2021 Infrastructure Jobs Act. And then what we thought about when we were looking through there is that by not adopting the standards, that doesn't hinder the board in any way from implementing any or all actions identified in the IIJA or other ones that they deem appropriate. And then also by not adopting those standards, it provides the board with flexibility. We have some projects that are going on right now that will provide more information and more detail to, for example, demand response, electric vehicles, and it will allow the board to take the time to review that information and make decisions based on the best timing and when it makes sense for our customers. The next few slides are the discussion points that we shared a couple weeks ago. Overall, around the EV standards, there's kind of three main points. One is our charging at home, our rates already provide our customers with 30 cents a gallon equivalent fuel. So we already provide that affordable and equitable charging option at home. We are also looking at using Washington State Clean Fuels funds to provide non-ratepayer funding for projects. And so when that kicks off, we're still going through rulemaking, or not rulemaking, but still going through some of the design of methodologies for that right now, working with ecology. And so we're looking at doing that. As mentioned last week, we've upgraded our website to assist customers with their EV-related questions, and we have an expert on staff to help with that. And then when it came to looking at like DC fast charging services, we mentioned to the board that it that our existing DC fast charging rate supports the expansion of services by companies. It provides a sustainable and predictable rate, especially when those companies can also take part in that low carbon fuel standard as well and receive credits for their generation. We don't believe competing in this market makes sense for us at this point in time. We talked a little bit about some of the challenges that non-Tesla fast charging systems have had, where there's been more operations and maintenance associated with those. We've looked at and reviewed articles from numerous places across the country where they have had issues with keeping those ones up to operating. And then district is not set up to provide the maintenance and operations of those DC fast charging networks at this time, and so we would have to go into all of that. Plus we learned from the last load presentation to the board that we have a couple more companies looking at adding more DC fast charging places here in the county already. And so all of those things are combining that that have staff recommending that we don't enter that market space right now. Just continuing on, I think we've talked about the rate. And so right now we're also assessing managed charging options that could help customers reduce peak loads. And so as we do see more and more electric vehicle infrastructure either at the home or within the DC fast charging type network, where you want to look at are there opportunities to work voluntarily with customers to manage those loads so that they're charging at times that make sense for both the utility as well as them. During our DR discussion, I already mentioned that we already have the authority to promote demand response activities. Currently, we're evaluating demand response and demand flexibility practices and programs. These voluntary programs will be made available to customers as they make economic sense. And if we don't adopt the first standard, then the rate recovery standard is not applicable for us. And then regarding time of use, we currently offer a time of use rate for our Schedule 30 industrial customers. And when or if it makes economic sense, the district can consider offering those type of alternative rates to the rest of our rate customers as well, up to the board. So we already have all of the abilities and authority to do the things that are listed within here, but we get to do it on a time frame that makes sense for us. Coming into public comments, we've had one public comment to date from 9/11. And I'll just read it for the record. It said, I agree with the PUD in not getting involved with formulation of fast EV charging programs at this time and bypassing establishment of rates for customers who agree to use less power during peak demand. With the exception of the Bitcoin business, they should be cut off completely during peak demand times. And so that's the one comment we received. Comment for your consideration. And with that, I'd like to open it up for opportunity for any public comments.
From any member of the public in the room, any comments? I hear none.
And provide some time for commissioners' discussion or questions.
Commissioners? Mr. Bergeron.
I've got a question here, Andrew. It has pertained to the clean fuel standard. Mm-hmm. You said that we get a credit for the residential use or charging. How do we determine that right now when somebody just plugs in? How do you know they're getting credit? Or how do we get the credit for that, I guess?
Right. And so it'll be based off of the general baseline will be based off of electric vehicles that are registered within Chelan County. And so that's going to be the base. And then there's some other information that goes into it, like you know, number of miles driven. Typical, it's all going to be based on sort of typical information, typical miles driven in a year, all those sorts of things. And so they'll take all that, and then credits for kilowatt hours will be generated off of that. But they're using the Department of Licensing data to identify the number of cars that are electric vehicles registered within our county.
So the credit's not based on consumption. It's based on ownership.
It's based on ownership with assumptions around consumption and the number of miles driven, which then is calculated out to how much energy is needed to drive those miles. And so there's several calculations that go into it, but it's all on that base assumption of number of miles driven and number of vehicles in the county. And then a calculation occurs to estimate the kilowatt hours.
Okay, and then those dollars that are received from that credit, we haven't determined yet how those dollars are going to be spent or what priority is going to be used for those.
That's correct. There are some there is some direction within the state law that says a certain percentage needs to go towards certain areas, but there's also an area where we can use it for a little bit more. For example, let's say we had a certain substation or feeder that we thought was being overused or was getting close to being at its peak capacity. We could potentially use some of those fundings to upgrade something like that. Now, we're not talking huge amounts of money to start with, and so we're talking maybe a couple $100,000 to start with. So we've got to keep that in consideration as well. But there's things that, you know, the state would like us to see, you know, multifamily housing. There's a section carved out for low income, however that looks. But the actual programs themselves have not been identified and have not been.
Yeah, I think that we would, as we move forward, we'd look at those funds as being recirculated back into the residential. If it comes from a residential, then yeah, I would think that's where those dollars should be highlighted. So well, that's just my view.
And as we get that first amount, that'll be input we'll look for. I mean, if that's the commission would like to have that, we would love to hear comments and where you would like to see some of that too. Yep.
One more.
Okay.
Okay. Demand response. We're talking about having a different, rate down the road. Under that demand response, if we move forward, will it also give us the ability to cut off electricity, and should we even be thinking of that? Because in California, they have those high peak loads, and then they end up, being able to go through and actually turn people off on their residential homes or whatever.
Right.
And that's extreme. I understand Absolutely. That. But is that something that would be considered under the program?
I think what we are. Because we've heard that and we've heard those concerns before, I think anything that we would do would be looking at voluntary programs. That would also be within the purview of the board. That would be up to you and how you would like to see those.
Okay. Yep. Thank
you. Yeah, you bet.
Okay, commissioners, any other questions? I have a completely off-the-wall question, which you may or may not get answer to today based on
everything. I have Jim.
Okay. do we know how many electric cars are in Chelan County today?
Yes, we do. There are approximately changes, of course, every day, but there are approximately 850, plus or minus, a few, but around that.
Okay.
Yep. And so we have access to data from the Department of Licensing, and so we download that data on a monthly basis to make sure that we're keeping up with that.
So those are cars registered in Chelan
County? Yes, those are.
Well, so there's a difference, right?
In yes, there is.
You have a vacational.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Because there's a number that number increases substantially on the weekend.
So, right. It is the registered number. We don't have a count of cars within the actual cars within the county. Those are what's registered here. And like you said, those probably do change and become greater numbers on the weekends.
Yes. Okay. Did I raise another question?
You did. That's right. And this is really just a more for edification. If the equivalent is 30 cents a gallon for home charging, mm-hmm. if you were to look at like a Tesla supercharger, can you put it into dollars, apples and apples? What would a Tesla charger be per gallon?
And Jim, you you'll probably correct me on this, but I believe when we looked at this a couple of years ago, it was in the $3 to $4 per gallon range, because they charge about, what is it, 30 cents a kWh for those. Jim, does that sound right?
That's correct. That's correct. The simple, the rule of thumb is you take the electric rate and multiply it times 10, and that's the equivalent cost per gallon. So the superchargers are running, some of them are running anywhere from about 40, 50 cents up to 50 cents. That's on the high side. So $4 to $5 a gallon for that supercharger.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? So, next steps?
Yes. The next steps, so on September 5th, we provided staff recommendations and we had a discussion on the purpose standards. We provided a comment period from the 5th through the 18th. Today was our public hearing, and so the next step would be on October 2nd, we would come back with a resolution presented to the board for consideration, outlining the recommendations that we have brought forward for the board.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
One Andrew, of the first Jim? Resolutions at the new. Oh,
I just thought about that too.
Yeah. Pretty awesome.
Yeah. It's an exciting one too.
Everything with you is exciting.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
You bet. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
All right. Item 4, review revised term sheet for the property sale to the YMCA, Dan Frazier.
Morning, Commissioners. Dan Frazier, Director of Shared Services, and kind of ties right in with Commissioner Smith's comments this morning about the future of the site, what the site holds. And I was actually reminiscing this morning, thinking how many times on the new service center and on the 5th Street we've sat here in this room and talked about, you know, future of the site and the service center. So it is kind of neat. Rachel said to bring a tissue because you were going to talk about the past, but didn't quite get there. So but I really appreciate the work that has gone on between PUD staff and the YMCA staff to get us to this point. We'll give you a little bit of a background. Well, while we're here today, is talk about the revised term sheet. So the term sheet that was presented to the board back in June has been revised, and I'll tell you why. We want to serve comments. The YMCA is here to give some comments, and then if there's any public comment, and then staff recommendation will be up for board discussion. So back in February and May, staff worked with the Wenatchee Valley YMCA about the potential to buy a portion of this property here. We reached a draft term sheet in June, presented to the board on June 26th, and that provided for the purchase of roughly 85,000 square feet of property, generally thought of as the tech shop and the utility services building, less the loading dock area. Shortly after that time, the YMCA approached the PUD and said, well, we've had a group that really wants to look at how we future-proof this development. It's a large investment, and how do we make sure that we're not in the same boat, you know, 10, 15 years from now and needing additional property. So we entered discussions with both the YMCA and this group. It's kind of a subset of the YMCA fundraising campaign. And so those discussions went on for a couple months and kind of yielded what is now in this revised term sheet. This term sheet, to remind the board, it's a non-binding document, but it really authorizes staff to draft the purchase and sale agreement. And the summary of the terms here, the changes are from, we go from 85,000 square feet to about 144,000 square feet. It goes from the tech shop now all the way to 5th Street. So it incorporates the fleet shop and the land that the fleet shop sits on. The other difference of this is the YMCA would assume the cost of demolishing the rest of the building that was reserved from the original term sheet. So the PD was going to tear down the rest of the utility services building. So the consideration changes, well, the numbers, so you start rounding things off. I just decided to go to the 100,000 level because it does get a little confusing. But the proposed sale price goes from 400,000 to 1.2 million is the rough change. And that would, the what makes that up is the value of the property was just over $1 million. But the YMCA assumes the demolition of the the portion that the PUD was going to demolish. Therefore, we gave them a credit against that $1 million. So it's about $800,000 roughly increase to the consideration for the transaction. So what it looks like is this. The red polygon around the site that does show on the, I remember north is to the left and up in these photos, it shows that the westerly line of the property being this proposed roadway that the PUD will either build or cause to be built under this agreement. But the resultant parcels that we'd be selling to the YMCA kind of look like that. So it goes from the southern end of the tech shop up through all the way to the right-of-way on Fifth Street, which if you do look at the Chelan County website, there's a little disparity there. Chelan County tax parcels are a little wrong there, and so we're in the process of cleaning that up through a boundary line adjustment to define these parcels. And if you look here, I did have a asterisk on the 144,000 square feet. That really depends a lot on where this roadway ends up being, because we're trying to make the roadway work with the YMCA's design criteria. They have a drop-off area. We want to make sure that we give them adequate space for a nice, safe drop-off for kids. And so this is changing as we right now are designing it. So it's roughly that amount. When we do execute the purchase and sale agreement, we will have a meets and bounds description of the property that we are selling. So the other responsibilities, this is pretty much the same except for the underlying areas. So we would build the roadway and sidewalk or cause it to be built, depending on what happens with the rest of the property in our attempt to sell and develop. We would relocate it, utility infrastructure. There's a lot of it under the buildings right now, and that would go away, and we would have utilities up the roadway as in a typical construction of this type. But we'd also remove the fueling station and all of the appurtenances. Now, this was always contemplated that the PUD was going to do this when we left the site, but now it's made part of this term sheet because now it's on a timeline for the YMCA's redevelopment. Then the YMCA would again demolish the tech and utility building, and now including the loading dock, crew spaces, and all the canopy structures to the north. Just draw your attention to the last item. The PUD is still statutorily required to take care of any environmental issues. We're kind of on the hook. And so we've just been crafting language in the purchase and sale agreement that allows us to participate in the mitigation. So it's not just we're financially liable. We can choose how and work with the YMCA on how to mitigate those things rather than just participate financially. So and we're working with inside and outside legal counsel on that issue. I'm going to invite Dory Foster from the YMCA up to give a few comments here.
Absolutely.
Good morning. It's been a couple months since I've been here, but first and foremost, we wouldn't be here today without three very passionate and committed donors. When we, in July 11th, we had a private reveal of our schematics to our donors, to our current capital campaign donor base. And there was a small group that was definitely concerned about our future opportunities. They realized that we would be landlocked with just lot 6 and 7 and took it upon themselves to reduce that burden away from the YMCA and collectively as helping us cover the cost of the lot 8 acquisition. So thank you for them. The fleet shop or the expansion to lot 8 for the YMCA will complement the additional programs that we're having at the main building, but also provide an opportunity for leased space. I call them profit centers because we will not be we won't have a person positioned there. It won't be open to the community all the time. It will be open during program time. So that really helps alleviate some of the operational burden we have. Our campaign goal is now $25.4 million, a little bit increased over the last 2 months. Part of that is because of the additional aquatic center plans that we have. We expanded the original plans. I feel it's ironic that we're going to be back, bringing a swimming pool back to the land. We have raised $11.3 million to date, 44% of our total campaign goal. But our impact goal And on page 5 of your annual report, the one with the spiral bounding, I want you to call attention to the impact numbers that we have. Our goal is to double those in our new facility with lot 6, 7, and 8. And I'm very confident we can do that in this location. So thank you for consideration. I'm open to answer any questions you may have on it. You're seeing the proposal, and I gave you our annual report.
Were you aware there had been a pool there?
No. I thought it was on the other side of the railroad tracks. Yeah.
That's quite a surprise to us, too. Mm-hmm. To me, for sure. You know, maybe there was others that knew more, but...
Well, I'm excited that you are expanding. When I went to the presentation, it was very obvious that you would be busting at the seams very quickly. Mm-hmm. So this does seem like the right. It supports your mission really well. It's the right thing to do for moving to into the future. So
it does. Thank you for recognizing
that. I hope your campaign goes well.
Thank you.
As I know it will.
Yeah. Any other comments, questions? Gary.
I would just like to sort of paint a picture a little bit of how the why impacts the community. And I'm certain it doesn't escape anyone in this room or anyone listening that the why really reaches far more than the numbers on this page. I know when my guys were young, they spent their days during summer camp at the Y. They went out to Lake Wenatchee with the Y. They learned how to fish with the Y. And all the meanwhile, I played racquetball, which really primed me for playing pickleball later in life at the Y. So the Y really has a very deep and penetrating reach within our community. And I, as for one commissioner, have to say that I am extremely delighted that the YMCA is interested and is able to secure property and to grow into a new facility. I also spent 7 years on the board of the Y. And during that period of time, the question of what do we do with this antiquated building was front and foremost. It's a great location. It's a great building. But it constrains the ability to help children. And with this new location, you will have the ability to help far more children and far more families. So I am just delighted that you're here today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Other comments, commissioners? So if you'll indulge me again, commissioners, and Dory's heard this story, and I don't know who else in the room has, but when Dory presented to Cashmere Rotary several months ago, mm-hmm. Greg Taylor shared a story. And Greg Taylor is the president of Liberty Orchards, Apples and Kotlets. His forefathers immigrated from Armenia in 1915, and they had never met each other. And they met at the YMCA in Seattle, lived there for a year as immigrants, hatched their plot to develop a candy company, and it emerged as Liberty Orchards in Cashmere. It was an incredible story that Greg shared about, that's about the history, yes, but the history is a good guide as to the impact of the potential of the future of the Y. And for many, many years, I've been a strong supporter of the Y, so I'm excited about the potential that exists and to see us continue to move down this path. So
thank you. To expand on that very briefly, Mr. Terksagian, if I'm saying it correctly.
Terksagian
stayed at our YMCA as well, served on our board, and on his deathbed grabbed the executive director of the Y and said, "Have I done enough?" So the answer was yes, obviously. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, thank you. Do we have additional public input? I see a couple smiling faces in the back row, one up a little closer. So, well, thanks for being here.
Hey. And don't forget a treat.
Yeah.
So with that, the staff recommendation for your consideration is to direct staff to complete the purchase and sale agreement in substantial terms similar to this term sheet. And so I'll just let you know that we are 85% there now. We've already started incorporating these changes and what they would look like in the PSA. So our plan is actually to come back at the October 16th board meeting at the new facility to be able to get the PSA in front of the board at that point in time. So if that's awaiting your recommendation, but we started going.
A nod of the head?
A nod of the
move,
head.
To move forward with the absolutely development? You've got this nod. Yeah.
Me as well.
You bet. All right.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dan.
Thanks, Dan.
Okay. Now, you can't leave before you take goodies. Oh.
There's not enough staff here at all.
Item 5, public power benefit project selection. Felicity Saberhagen.
Good morning. Felicity Saberhagen, business manager, here today to talk about and facilitate a discussion around public power benefits. And specifically, we're looking at proposed projects and funding for 2024. Public power benefit program is board directed and authorized and intended to support the strategic priority to enhance the quality of life in Chelan County through programs that deliver public power, that deliver benefits and distribute benefits of public power. We are here today to look for direction from the board to move forward with both the proposed projects for 2024 as well as funding program options. I'd like to note that there are a number of projects that are already underway. Any of those that you don't see today don't require additional funding. To give you an initial peek in the bag, we do have five projects that we are bringing forward today. There were 12 that were reviewed for a proposal and to bring forward for consideration of the board. I'd like to point out that many of those that we're not bringing forward today, we were able to address through our normal operational funding. So there are very few that are needs that are not really getting met through this through today. I'm going to give a little bit more information on each of these going forward, but two of them are related to our fiber program. One is for reliability for our Stehekin customer owners. Fourth one is for our Manson Bay recreation sites and community. And the last one is for the redevelopment of the Fifth Street campus. This is a milestone right here. 2024 is the last funding year for the expansion of the fiber program. With the $2.1 million we'll be allocating today, it will be a total of $27 million that has been allocated to support the expansion throughout our county. As a reminder, our construction will continue through 2026 for those sites that are expanding through this program.
Felicity, just looking at that, have we talked about, or is there any idea of what fiber, quote, expansion might look like post-2026?
Thank you for that lead-in right now. We are looking at that funding for the finalization of that plan. There are additional expansion areas or opportunities for additional areas to expand to. This funding is a bridge right now that will allow for future decision-making. So don't have to make any decisions today, per se, regarding future expansion areas, but this would allow us to develop and explore what those areas might look like.
Now I know what the word bridge meant. Okay.
There you go. it's $750,000 that we're asking for to bridge that program to continue forward into the future. So what we've been doing is design 1 year, construction the next. This would allow us to do the design and look at those expansion areas and develop some costs for future opportunities.
Yeah, and we do plan to come back this fall with an update on that finalization plan to the board. Okay. Not the completion one, but then just some of the options we're considering for that finalization.
Stehekin reliability. I think many of you, all of you are likely aware that we have some issues with meeting peak load at Stehekin. What we'd like to do is do a holistic exploration of what is needed at the plant in order to be able to meet those peak loads and create more reliability for our customer owners. Just as a side note, this is just an initial investigation. We have done some preliminary exploratory looks before, but there are some more opportunities now as technology evolves and communication opportunities have increased. It does give us other options that maybe weren't available before. So this is a holistic look at that and what it would take in order to get our plant up to modernized in order to be able to do what we need it to do to address the peak load. This is $1 million is just for this exploration. It does not include construction costs on a go-forward basis. And we're looking at doing that exploration in 2024.
Yeah, and I'll add to this. The more we learn, the more this very likely $1 million isn't going to be enough. And one of the things we talked about was a pilot project with a battery. And then, like anything, you start unwinding what all is required to make that work. And then you find control systems need to be upgraded for the hydro to make all that work, the battery to come on and off. And so it's too early to tell, but I will say if we want to do the battery, it'll be significantly north of the $1 million for all the other things that have to happen with the hydro to make that work. And that's where Felicity's getting into this. We want to take a holistic view of, okay, what are the other options? Some of the things we've talked about over the years is trying to get more energy out of the hydro system using the same amount of water, and some of those things come into play too. So more to come here, but awfully early, even early indications are this will be significantly more than $1 million.
So would that, quote, $1 million be primarily dedicated to consultants then?
At this point, yes.
Okay.
We would be looking at the a lot of opportunities that we have.
And is that going to be in conjunction with the work that the National Park System and the community are doing in trying to identify their future needs, you know, their growth?
I can take that one. We will definitely collaborate with them on their sustainability plan with the county and the Park Service. We don't want to do anything here that would be contrary to what that sustainability plan would indicate. So we want to make sure we're working with all the entities up there.
Awesome. I figured that, but...
Yeah, good question.
This project is to connect our Manson Bay Park that is PUD owned with a recreation area that is supported by the Manson community. Just to point out that this project is complementary to other projects that are going on within Manson Bay. I don't have a timeline on here right now because we don't know what that would look like. Manson Bay is seeking other funding opportunities outside of the PUD that would include grant funding, and often that's not as predictable in terms of timing. So, but this would actually just create that connection between the two areas and would provide safe access for all pedestrians. Hmm. And I know you guys have been talking a lot about this one lately. This is the Fifth Street Campus Redevelopment, Electric Avenue. So in addition to creating the avenue itself, we would be providing utilities to each of the separate parcels as they get divided out. and as that to establish the COA or the corporate owners association. Thank you. I was trying to think of HOA, but it's COA. And so consistent with this, this is also would be called Electric Avenue. The request for this is $4 million. We have an estimated completion date right now of 2025 for the work to be completed. So if you've done all the math, probably realize we are well over the approved $6 million for this program. So we have a couple of options I'd like to bring forward to think about for board consideration. One is to increase the public power benefit funding from $6 million to $8.35 million. As a benefit, this would allow all of the proposed projects to move forward. It is a higher cost on the con, and it does not allow funding for new projects should they arise throughout the year. We usually do have some funding available and often do have new projects that do come forward or have existing projects that need additional funding to be completed. The board could also consider doing a one-time allocation for the Fifth Street campus of $4 million. This would bring the total public power benefit for 2024 to $10 million. This is a higher cost, but would allow for room should new projects come forward over the next year. And lastly, we could stick with the course that we've already have in motion and only allocate $6 million, but we would need to make some decisions around the proposed projects that have been brought forward. So we are looking today for board direction on the 2024 funding and proposed projects. I'd like to invite some discussion.
Commissioners. Commissioner Arsenal.
Felicity, good presentation.
Thank you.
And all very worthy projects. Just a question that in past years, maybe not recent past years, but in past years, we've had surplus public power dollars that were not spent on different projects. What are those dollars available? And could you refresh my memory? What happened to those dollars?
Absolutely. One of the tenets we had when we started the program is if we didn't spend it in that year, we would basically lose it. So it wasn't anything we were carrying over. There were only a couple of years that we haven't fully allocated, and I'd have to go back and look at my notes, but I think it's around 17 or 18 that we didn't fully allocate spending. But all of the other years, we have been able to fully allocate.
Great. Okay. Thanks.
You're welcome.
I was hoping to find some in the closet. Someone in the closet.
It is. It's just back in the big
closet. Yeah. So it brings up my comment on this. Sitting on that committee that recommended these projects, it occurred to me that, you know, because there are years that we don't allocate and different things, and there might be other funds available that can be transferred to a, you know, quote, public power benefit program. I came away from my first sitting on that committee is that I think there's a need to be able to attract some funds, have a fund set up where we actually put money in. Some years we might have more money or other years we might not, because right now the dollars come from unrestricted funds. And so I'd like to see maybe some course or, I guess, look into the possibility of having a separate fund allocated for public power benefit, and thereby that it can be tracked. We don't lose those dollars that Commissioner Arsenal talked about. Those would be retained in that fund, and that could be allocated down the road, rather than having just a large unrestricted fund that we tap in and pull out according to what we think, or, you know. The reason I say that is because it if you have a dollar figure out there, then you can quickly prioritize what's important and what's not important. And I certainly believe that, you know, public power benefits should be put into our our, you know, our core assets, you know, what we do are blocking and tackling, which is, you know, water, wastewater, fiber, and electricity. Those should be our main priorities, and if we can help in some fashion. So that's my comment on it. You know, I hope we do look forward to doing more of these projects. I'm in favor of all of them. I'm also, when I look at the $4 million going for the Fifth Street campus, I think that should be a one-time allocation. And hopefully we can look to other communities down the road in their projects and be able to fund certain things that are more cosmetic than they are what we normally do. At least have that consideration as we move forward. So thank you.
Thank you. As a reminder, too, we do do a look forward and a look back each year to ensure that we have funds to be able to support the program. I think for this planning cycle, when we looked forward, we had really a solid financial performance for the foreseeable future. And then also our historical performance was very strong. So the board opted to select to allocate the $6 million per year. In the prior planning cycle, it was $4 million per year as we were getting kind of some momentum going through the program. So it has been viewed that way.
Just one other comment, if I may. I was here at the board meetings when we first started this process, and I remember there was a list given to us. I don't know, 15, you remember that, Randy? Mm-hmm. And we had a difficult time picking. I think it was like $5 million allocated, and we couldn't spend the money at the time because we really didn't know how to prioritize it. So if my memory serves correctly, that first year we didn't actually go for everything. But we've gone a long way since then, now that looking from the beginning of what we're doing now, and I think it's a real good program.
So thank you. Thank you.
Commissioner Berggren, curious, if we did the $4 million one-time allocation, were there some projects that didn't make the list that you would consider adding
to
them?
No, I'm sorry, I wasn't clear enough. Go ahead, and I would support everything here, but consider I guess, am I reading that right?
Well, how I read, what I heard was that if you consider the $4 million a one-time allocation, then that's
it's all a one-time
on top of
the existing
yep. $6 million. That's bringing it up to a $10 million.
That was my intention. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So in that situation, as I heard, there were certain projects that, did you say 12 total projects?
12 total.
And some that were not considered. Was that a funding mechanism? Did it not meet the criteria, or would you consider some of those that were bumped
to
bring forward?
My view is just to consider what we have in front of us right now, and if there is a residual, then that would be tracked under the terms that I brought up, that it'd be a fund. It goes into that fund, it's retained, and it can be used down the road.
Commissioner Allen, I will also add that most of the projects that weren't brought forward, we were able to fund through normal operations.
So most. That indicates maybe one or two.
Correct.
I would say that I think that the committee that looked at those, some of them may or may not qualify. We'd have to revisit whether those are appropriate, probably reorganize or reconvene that group and have further conversation and come back to the board with further recommendation on those other projects. Because once we moved past them, we didn't really revisit them, so we'd have to go back.
Thank you.
Other comments?
I thought this was the most effective, efficient review of grants that we've had since my time here. So I thought it went really well reviewing what we can and can't do by statute, by looking at what I particularly appreciated was the effort by staff to look at, well, this came to us, but we might be able to fund this in a different method. And so when it all came in front of us, then it just was, a lot is already accomplished. We've already served many customers already in groups, and it became a
very efficient way of looking at what was in front of us. So thank you for the great efficient work on that.
You're welcome.
I would think that we would go, could you go back to the different options for us? So kind of taking off what Commissioner Bergeron was saying, my recommendation would be to consider the $4 million added to that, with the idea that we're going to track this year what we don't use and set aside and reserve for later funding, or what might kind of, Kelly, what you're saying, what didn't get addressed, what, and as Felicity was mentioning, things that come up to us, rather than just kind of dipping into the pot and pulling out of it. Sorry, I forgot that button. We would...
No treats for you.
Yeah. We would look at it and say, well, you know, anything else that comes up to us this year, this is our limit. We may address it with what we have, but it just helps me in my thinking that I'm not going to push the limits and dig into a different pot of money, and that it is a limited resource and we need to approve accordingly. So that's just my thinking of how I look at anything else that's going to come to us this year. I just need some boundaries there. So that's my recommendation, is to go for the full, what was the total, was
$4 million plus. Is this
$10 million?
Yeah.
So it's,
is it possible to get a list of the projects that were funded by other mechanisms?
Absolutely.
Thank you. $4 million.
So I guess my question, just to review, I wasn't sure if it was the $4 million added to the six or $4 million added to the 8.3. So
$4 million added to the six, so okay. For the $10 million.
So that would be my recommendation for us to move forward.
Mm-hmm. That's fine as well. Commissioners,
yeah, McKenna said it very. Well, I want to thank Commissioners Bergeron and McKenna for agreeing to sit on that committee, because I know there was going to be a lot of good discussion, and I think they've come back, from my perspective, with a great recommendation. It calls to question, and I know we've had this off and on discussion. When the Public Power Benefit Program was started, and Commissioner Bergeron and I were both here at that moment in time, we based the amount we allocated on an annual basis, not by some magical method, but I believe that we had a number in mind based on how well we were doing as a utility. Since that time, we've been doing somewhat better as a utility, and the connection to how well we're doing has been lost. And we may as a commission and senior management want to revisit and have a conversation about that whole methodology at some point in the future, maybe not too distant future, but for here and now and today, with what's before us, you know, I think you guys did a great job, and I'm all for what you're suggesting.
Commissioner Smith, I couldn't agree with you more of what you just said, and I think that this is important for the commission, in my view, should move forward in growing this program in a way that we can look at funding mechanisms to the program, and we can have discussions around that, because there are several alternatives that are out there that's too early to get into that now, but at some point we can have conversations with staff and management and different things, what our ideas are and how this fund could be or this program could be funded, rather than just, like you said, pull it out of a hat and say, here it is. Have a more clear methodology around it. I think there's opportunities there, so I just want to throw that out and let everybody chew on it. And maybe down the road we can come up with something.
So I'm delighted to hear my fellow commissioners talking in a fashion that sort of evokes the original intent of the Public Power Benefit Program. I also was here when that was put together.
Oh, started. Sorry, guys.
And
I apologize.
It was, as I recall, the initial funding was $4 million.
Yep.
And it was very uncomfortable, as Commissioner Bergeron said, that making sure we get this right. And no, we did not spend all $4 million the first year. But the one repetitive theme that continued to permeate year one and two, and I think into year three of the Public Power Benefit Program, was walk before you run.
Crawl before you walk.
And crawl before you walk.
Yep.
And so we really wanted to get this right. We purposely limited the dollars because we wanted to learn along the way, and we chose not to be rash and make mistakes. And so, Felicity, you actually helped me remember this, particularly as you mentioned that we are now historically able to spend and allocate most of the dollars to very worthy projects. So what I hear my fellow commissioners talking about is maybe we're at the point where, I'm not going to use the word run, but we perhaps are at the point where we can jog. And so we've grown a little bit. We feel that we've done a fairly good job with the public power benefit dollars that were entrusted to us by our customer owners. And I really believe, as Commissioner Bergeron said, that perhaps we are at a point where we can increase this to some larger number. We're talking about $10 million. Maybe $10 million is the number. Maybe it's not. But that's a point for discussion. And find projects that we can go ahead and fund. Now, the one thing I would suggest, and this is just the finance guy and me talking, is that especially if we're expending the dollar amount to, just again, pick $10 million, maybe what we want to do is change the wording of our project so that we can retain surplus, so that in those years that we really can't find worthy projects to spend all the money, we're not forced to spend it or lose it. And that would then flow into the next year where perhaps more worthy projects would rise to the top. And it might take an extra million, and we don't have to go back and look for that money. The source of these dollars were all, as Commissioner Smith said, they were all driven by really having a great year financially. But the caveat has always been that when those years are not as great, then we will not fund, or we will reduce the funding to the program. And I think we still operate under that belief. So currently, things are going really fine, and we have those dollars. Once again, by throwing them into a fund that retains that surplus, even in those years where we have slowing revenue, we'll still be able to fund projects. So that's my two cents as a commissioner and a little rundown memory lane.
Yep.
On how this project, or how the Public Power Benefit Program, came to be.
And I completely apologize for missing you in the first go around.
No problem.
I as well.
Not a problem. Not a problem.
All right. So next steps?
So depending on board direction, we will consider timing of returning for board action. If we are to do a one-time allocation, the board authorized under resolution the $6 million per year, so we would need to return to do another resolution to increase that.
So did you hear enough?
Well, I think, it was pretty clear. It was pretty much a consensus. So I think what we do is plan to come back in the next board meeting or two and solidify that. No sense in waiting. Nail that down with a resolution or a motion, something like that.
Okay, so. Great.
And all of you are two steps ahead, thinking about reevaluating the Public Power Benefits Program for strategic planning in 2024. So excited to continue that conversation with all of you as we move forward.
Yeah, and I would just echo, I think the plan is, or the program is working as planned, just like you have the ability to adjust. But I do agree with the sentiment that we should have a methodology for good years and bad years, and that the methodology would, And again, the methodology is just used as a starting point to come back to the board and say, according to the methodology, here's the amount of money that, you know, we think we can allocate to this, and the board can always choose to go up or down in addition. But we want to have both of those elements.
So can I just ask a procedural question of our attorney? This work has been ongoing. Do we have to come back with that resolution, or does a motion take care of that today?
I think you could do both. For tracking purposes, it's always easier to have a resolution. Okay. So I don't want to dismiss Rebecca's talent at tracking motions, but she does track them all. It's just easier to find for staff, I would say, and or be responsive to request to have
That's
a
I need.
Resolution.
Thank you.
The answer is either would work.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Felicity.
Yeah, thank you, Felicity.
And thank you, Commissioners McKenna and Bergeron.
Okay, we've arrived at that moment where any additional public comment would be welcome. I don't believe there's any public in the room other than media. So, and I'm anticipating we just continue to move forward.
We'll see how, I think we have people available. We'll see how far we can get.
Okay.
If you'd like to.
The first item on the afternoon business session is the consent agenda. Is there a motion for approval?
I would so move approval of the agenda.
The consent agenda.
The consent agenda.
Yep. Is there a second?
Second.
So moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is carried, and we are on to agenda item 10.
Okay, I'd like to invite Larry Cordes up. This is a resolution authorizing budget for the plane transformer replacement project, ratifying field work order change order numbers 4 through 7, approving field work order number 8, authorizing final acceptance of the supply of the North Shore substation transformer, and authorizing release of retainage for contract number 18-67 with WEG Transformers, USA, LLC of Washington, Missouri for 28 megawatt substation power transformers. Larry?
Thank you, Kurt.
There's a lot going on there, and Larry's going to make it simple for all of us.
Yeah, it's a busy resolution. we have that slide from our previous meeting. Okay, great. I think we can cover it just on the resolution itself. So the highlights of the resolution, we've put a lot into this this action. The North Shore substation transformer was purchased under field work order number 3. It's been delivered, approved. The substation is making tremendous progress construction-wise. And we can, at a point that the transformer has been, the actual transformer piece of equipment has been accepted and can be closed out. We also want to authorize the budget for the plane transformer replacement. The plane transformer is, not being an electrical engineer, but it's got some challenges with some oil leakage and arcing within the transformer. Needs to be replaced. So we want to approve the budget. And then moving on, associated with the plane transformer, we want to purchase another transformer for plane and one for our proposed Bavarian substation. So that takes care of field work orders number 7 and 8. I would just highlight then this contract, 1867, was for the purchase of 7 transformers. So if we get through with this action, we will have 5 of the 7 acknowledged. So the 4th and 5th are designated for Bavarian and Plain. The 6th and 7th transformers, we anticipate placing the order for those here in November. And that will be the last 2 that we'll purchase under this contract. Locations for those 2 excuse me, for those transformers will probably be either West Wenatchee or the Wenatchee substation. So, and I might note too that that order for the 6th and 7th transformers, we've got the price established in field work order number 7 for those. So the last four, Bavarian Plain, and then the 6th and 7th will all be purchased at the same price. So, any questions? Yeah.
So I know supply chain issues and challenges and ordering, timely ordering so that they're delivered on site. What's the plan if they come in faster than what we're ready for them, or vice versa?
Yeah, we're anticipating. We feel good that we've got a place for Bavarian and Plain.
Okay.
But given those concerns about supply, from what I understand, talking to the distribution side of things, we're willing to find a place to store them.
If you can get a.
Yeah.
Okay. It's actually already happened once. North Shore, you might share just how we arranged the North Shore with that situation.
From what I've been told, I wasn't here then, but as I understand, the North Shore transformers weren't ready. I mean, the site wasn't ready. Transformers showed up, so we just built temporary pads and set them and got them all, got the right power to them that we needed for basic maintenance.
We also, that's part of the field work orders here that you're ratifying, we also paid them $15,000 to store it temporarily to delay delivery on it.
Oh,
for North Shore.
Well, yeah, for North Shore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
yeah. That's I thought you were referring to OMI.
Oh, no. Sorry.
Sorry.
Yeah. Sorry. That situation. We will find a way to make it work if we get a transformer.
Thank you.
Either they store it or we find a temporary situation like Larry described. And
well, and North Shore was somewhat unique in that temporary location was Laredo, Texas. Just across the river.
Oh, really?
We checked it out on Google Earth, made sure we had a transformer there.
We knew we had
an address and a place, so if we ever needed to look at our transformer, we knew where to go.
Wow.
So this is not pertaining to this work order, but I'm hopeful that you might help me understand. Somebody had mentioned that as a public utility, we're limited to the number of transformers that we can order. Is that
true? Never heard of it.
Okay.
If there's something out there that exists, I've never heard of it.
Okay.
Yeah, I haven't either.
I will get back to you on that then. Thank you.
Just a clarification a little bit here, Larry. You mentioned at the beginning there was a transformer that was leaking oil and parking.
Well,
so that kind of like, you know, that raises my interest. That, you know, if it's arcing, I know what that is in my world.
Yeah, I can't. Leaking oil is probably not the right term, but from what I understand, there's some short circuiting or some arcing. Probably not arcing, from what I understand, within the transformer. That puts off a gas within the oil. And then those gas levels are what's being detected.
Yeah, just from my perspective, where I'm coming from is a wind machine, you know, electric wind machine that goes bad. I've seen arcing on those in the middle of the night. And not something you want to be next to.
Yeah.
I
might add that this is part of our maintenance program on these substation transformers is to monitor the gas levels inside the transformers, and that's what Larry's referring to.
Okay.
So the gas levels, as the gas levels increase, it does indicate there's something going on inside that would generate gas. And so we go, and depending on the gas levels, we monitor or we go filter the oil. We maintain them until we can replace them. And so this, Plain experiences a higher fault duty than most of our substations because of the number of outages up there. And so in this particular case, we're starting to see the early indications that, okay, this thing's going to have to be replaced soon, and so let's get it on order. It's not uncommon to find the gas in the transformer. And to your situation that you're referring to, it's not a, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? It's like, no, we're starting to see the signs that this thing needs to be replaced.
There reminds me of a question or incident that we had, I think it was at Rock Island, where one exploded. Was that a transformer?
You're probably referring to Rocky Reach Switchyard a while ago. A current transformer. That was because of misconfiguration on the wiring, not so much in a situation like this.
Curious what the risk.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, 2015, roughly around there.
Thank you.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I just would like to share, mostly for my fellow commissioners, I think staff is probably well aware of this already. I was at a WAPUTA meeting in Tri-Cities last week, and one of the topics brought up was the difficulty with which to secure transformers. And the commission, one particular commissioner was talking about the now extended delay time between when you place the order and when you actually receive the transformer, that it is even longer than it was just 12 months ago, and that the costs have risen dramatically. One commissioner mentioned that it was somewhere in the neighborhood of approaching 100% increase since they bought a transformer previously, which was a while ago. So I think it's prudent and wise that if we have a contract and we're at the end of receiving those transformers from that contract, we take a look at the next delivery time and see if it's prudent to start getting more transformers on order.
Yeah, appreciate that. And that's so the transformers, all the transformers Larry was referring to would be up to 5 transformers, and then the plan is to come back to order those next 2, 6, and 7 this fall.
Yeah, November.
Answer the question, is 2 the right number?
Well, that's all we're authorized under the contract.
Oh, okay.
So and to lock in the pricing that Larry referred to. I'd say it was great foresight to enter into a contract like this to order up to 7 for the reasons you're all stating. Yeah. I think with a lot going on here with accepting field work orders and accepting North Shore, and I just want to make sure that one of the elements that stood out was we are establishing a new budget for the plain substation transformer that we currently didn't have in the budget, and that's the $2.2 million.
Correct.
Yeah. So that's a key part. The rest of this is kind of the ups and downs of the particulars in the contract, but that is something that is brand new. I wanted to make sure that was clear.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yep.
Thanks, Larry. Okay, resolution 11 is a resolution, and for this one we have John Sagasser online filling in for Devin Myers, actually for 11 and 12, but I'll read 11 first. A resolution ratifying field work order change order number 2-GMP3 and authorizing the issuance of a GMP amendment number 6 to North Bank Civil and Marine Incorporated of Vancouver, Washington to provide a GMP and schedule for the upgrade of the 4th unit, Unit 3, and HPU modifications on units U1 and U2 under contract number 20-14 for the Rock Island Powerhouse number 2 draft tube gate cylinder and hydraulic power unit upgrade. Take it away, John.
All right. Thank you, Kirk. So again, I'm John Sagerser. I'm the program manager for the overall Powerhouse 2 rehabilitation efforts going on down here at Rock Island. Again, we're looking to ratify field work order number 2, and that's overall a deduction as we removed any unused allowances from the contract. So it deducted or reduced that overall GMP amount by roughly $130,000. We are also requesting approval for the general manager to execute GMP number 6, which is for the 4th unit or unit U3. It also includes relocation of transducers, level switches on 2 of the other previously installed units for a total of about $830,000. This revises the overall contract sum to roughly $10.1 million for all the work scheduled so far on the draft tube gates. We do have a current approved budget of $12.1 million and are currently forecasting the overall project to finish at around $15.2 million. It is, this is the design-build project that's the furthest along of all the design-build projects that we've executed so far, and I'm happy to report that we are starting to see some of the benefits that we were hoping for out of these types of projects. Of note, since this is the fourth unit, we're roughly halfway through at this point in time, and we're seeing a deduction in the cost for this unit about $200,000 less than what we saw on U8. This can be attributed to a lot of things, including lessons learned from previous units, the ability to manage schedule better, particularly by getting experienced crews from unit to unit. So we're hopeful, as I said, this one's the furthest along, but we're starting to see some of those benefits anticipated by the design build process. And because we've got several other design build projects, as you know, including the next one that I'll be presenting, that we'll be expecting to see these same kind of benefits as well. Any questions on this one?
Just a comment. That's a really good thing to hear that we're seeing the benefits that rapidly. That's great.
It is. And we do expect, you know, a bit of a learning curve like everything else. But this one being, you know, having three units done and that we're starting to see that price and a time of execution, also the schedule to implement it. So lost generation associated with the work is dropping off as well. Just kind of fine tune what we're doing on these ones. It's good to see.
Say the other thing that the project team has done. We originally, when we scoped out this project, we were planning to do this work during the unit outages, which would be spread out over 10, 11 years. And I think what the project team has done is said we can execute this on a shorter time frame. And what that allows us to do is we do have to take additional outages, but there's times of years where we can take the outages without a significant impact. But if you consider what the costs or escalation of costs over time would be, we're seeing, particularly on the labor and material side, that really go up through the roof. And so what this does is we get these things done in a shorter time frame and reduce the overall cost of the project. So I think the team's done a number of things to try and keep the costs down and but at the same time get the work done that needs to be done. And so appreciate the team's effort.
Any questions?
Ready for the next one?
You bet.
Okay. Next one, agenda item number 12 is a resolution ratifying field work order change orders number 1-DBA, 1-PC, 2-PC, 3-PC, 1-GMP1, 2-GMP1, and 1-GMP2, and further authorizing final acceptance of work performed under the pre-construction services phase and guaranteed maximum price amendment number 1, and further authorizing the issuance of guarantee GMP amendment number 3 to Olson Industrial Electric Incorporated of Springfield, Oregon for generator lead replacements of units U3 and U5 for Rock Island Powerhouse 2. Generator lead replacement project contract number 20-18. John?
Well done, Kirk. That was a mouthful.
Yeah, it was.
To try to summarize it as best I can, the sum total of all the field work orders that we're ratifying here is a total contract reduction of roughly $108,000. As Kirk mentioned in there, we're also looking to perform final acceptance on two aspects of this particular contract. The first one is pre-construction services. This is where they do the design portion of the project. It was executed in May of 2021 for roughly $314,000. As mentioned, there were three field work orders with an overall decrease of about $80,000 for a revised contract sum for pre-construction services or design of about $234,000. We're also looking for final acceptance on guaranteed maximum price amendment number one, which was for field installation for the first unit, which was unit U2. That was executed in December of 2021 for roughly $778,000. Two field work orders on that GMP for a $28,000 decrease. So we'd close it out at roughly $750,000. Going forward, we are requesting approval from the general manager, or for the general manager to be able to execute guaranteed price amendment number two for the replacement of the generator main leads on our second and third unit. That would be happen this fall on units U3 and U5 for roughly $1 million. That revises the overall contract sum to $3.3 million. And our current project forecast for this one would finish at about $6.8 million. That's about all I've got. Any questions on that one?
Commissioners, any questions? Thank you, John.
You're welcome.
I will add on things like this progressive design build. One of the things we're considering is bringing forward a request for additional delegated authority. As long as there's a lot of actions that have to happen here, the way this contract structure is set up. And so we've done this before with some of the facilities. We've increased the delegated authority. So as long as the work is being done within the budget that's established, they would allow more of these things to be done by the general manager. So just something for you to consider that will be coming forward probably on the next go around on these things, whether or not that's something you want to do.
All right.
And John was filling in for Devin Myers, who went to New Brunswick, and I don't think at the time he would have thought he might be experiencing a hurricane
in that area.
Canada, and so I just texted him, make sure he's okay. He's okay. He's just trying to catch a flight out now.
They canceled all flights out of that area for like 3 days.
Well, they canceled all flights out.
All flights, yeah.
Question.
Going back to your comment on authority, delegated authority, I am really comfortable with that, but I always like to get an update when things change, what's being changed and communicated.
Certainly. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, ready for the next one?
Thank you, John.
Thanks, John.
Thank you.
Agenda item number 13 is a resolution authorizing amendment number 2 to service agreement SATA number 12-12268 with McMillan Incorporated to provide Rock Island Spillway Modernization Program Management Services. Sam Dilley's with us online.
And on mute.
Can you hear us, Sam? Yeah. Can you hear us, Sam? Oh, he can hear us. Yeah. Why don't we jump? We'll jump to 14. Come back.
Yeah.
We got Mark in the room here. So let's jump down to Mark. You want to come on up? Buy some time for Sam here. Okay, agenda item number 14 is a resolution rejecting all bids and declaring that no bids were received for Rockwell Automation Allen Bradley Control Equipment bid number 23-12931 and authorizing the supply of Rockwell Automation Allen Bradley Control Equipment be obtained by negotiation. Welcome, Mark.
Hey, thank you. My name is Mark Peasley. I'm a project manager here at Chelan PUD. I specialize in the SCADA and control system projects. I'm here with a resolution to reject all bids and negotiate. The solicitation is for material only with an engineer's estimate of $244,000. The material is for Rockwell Automation control equipment for the Rocky Reach Juvenile Fish Bypass. The juvenile fish bypass is now 20 years old. Much of the control equipment is end of life, and replacement equipment is no longer available. The equipment will be used to update all the SCADA and control equipment on the JFB. Construction is scheduled to begin in October 2024 during the bypass outage. Two non-responsive bids were received. The low bidder did not supply a bid bond. The second bid proposal included material exceptions to the terms and conditions of the bid. I'm here asking the commission to reject both bids and negotiate.
Commissioners, questions? I just have a comment. I believe this might be your first time in the boardroom, Mark.
This is my first time.
Because I don't recall having met you before, so welcome to the boardroom.
Thank you.
And I'm knowing these 20-year-old controls, I look at you and think, you weren't out of grade school yet. But.
Yeah, I think it was designed when I was in high school. So.
Yeah, so it reminds me that time does pass, because I remember before we had that, so... Great to have you here and making the presentation.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm in the awkward phase of my life where I'm not young and I'm not quite old.
You feel that way all the time. Welcome.
I would say enjoy it. Enjoy it. Yeah.
I can't remember what tour we were on or what meeting we were on. They took us through and showed the controls, so I know what you're talking about and understand that. So.
Yeah,
I remember when we were out there last.
Okay, well, thank you for coming in.
I don't know if you noticed how close those bids were. They were within $500 of each other. $160,000 project. So, yeah.
Interesting. All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Sounds like Sam's got the audio working. Sam, you want to do a test?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you.
We can.
Fine. You want to go back to Resolution 13?
Yes. Great. Thank you. I don't know what happened. I had my headphones on. I could hear you guys, but my audio wasn't coming through, so I called in on my cell phone. I'm Sam Dillon, Project Manager. I'm with Rock Island Group. We are doing a resolution with McMillan to increase the spending authorization from $300,000 to $2.3 million, $2 million increase. This is part of a larger project. The spillway modernization program is currently estimated in the five-year plan at around $60 million. As we're getting underway, we need to work with consulting engineers to better understand the work that we're going to be performing in the next 5 years, and that's what this resolution does, is it increases our spending authorization to do some of that work. Some of the work contained within this service agreement increase would be to do a condition assessment of the spillway, gantry crane electrical system study, and additional design work on the over-under gates for spill bays 32, 31, and 30. The current work was authorized to use McMillan as a managing consultant, and we asked them to provide a analysis of a prototype and in a design competition, and the district selected McMillan to do the work, the future work, after considering them and another firm in doing the design analysis. Are there any questions?
Questions, commissioners?
Nope.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sam.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, commissioners, we have resolutions 10 through 14 before us. Is there a motion to approve them?
So moved.
Seconded.
It's been moved and seconded to approve resolutions 10 through 14. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is carried.
I think it's a good thing that we're moving into the new building. Our sound system is telling us that it's tired and static.
It's been saying that for 20 years.
We're finally listening.
Well, and not to mention the acoustics in the new room are just really, really good.
Yeah.
So. Have you been having meetings in there already?
No, not in the boardroom. some of the other conference rooms.
Tell them it's off limits until the first board meeting?
I don't know.
it might have to be. If they have it all finished.
So it's about 8 minutes to 12. We know we don't have restaurant options downstairs, but if you have a quick manager item.
I just have one.
Okay.
And it can be quick.
Okay.
Just a reminder to the public that the lobby at 327 North Wenatchee Avenue is closed this week for the move. Customers can still do business online or by phone, but the lobby itself for walk-in traffic is closed, and then it will open Monday at the new service center in Old Station.
Wow.
September 25th. Yeah.
We'll have placards and posting on where people can go to seek information. If they
need. I think so. We'll have to look and verify that. Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. Sounds like they should already be up.
Perfect. Okay. All right. Well, we might have a report from on commissioner items, so maybe we could hold that till our 1 o'clock. So we'll recess and reconvene at 1 o'clock back here. Good afternoon. Welcome to the afternoon session of the September 18, 2023 meeting of the Chelan Public Utilities Commission. We met this morning for 2 hours and conducted a lot of our afternoon business, so we have a very brief afternoon session at this point before we go into executive session, but we will pick right up where we left off, and that is with commission items. Are there any commissioner items since our last meeting? Commissioner Arsenault.
Thank you. So this last week was a WPUTA conference that took place in Tri-Cities. It involved a variety of topics. One of the ones that I would like to report on is that the executive committee has selected the next executive director. George Kahn, of course, had given his notice of retirement. He's planning to retire at the end of this year. And the executive committee has been taking, 2 months or more time in terms of reviewing the possibilities and the path forward. And Liz Anderson, who I think most everyone in this room probably knows, had submitted her interest and application. So after thorough interviews with her, and she submitted a 1-year, 5-year plan, which was nothing short of amazing in terms of her vision as to what the utility industry, where they may be heading, but as well where WPUTA can go to position itself to be of assistance. Really good work. She spent a significant amount of time and actually it's about 7 pages long just on the 5-year portion. So she really put a lot of thought into it. We're really pleased to offer her the position. She's accepted. And so she will be working with George Kahn through the remainder of this year. George has offered to stay on board through the legislative session, end of April, to make sure that we're not down a person during the legislative session. And then at that point, he would take his leave. So after the first of the year, George will be of assistance to Liz. He will be part-time helping out with the transition. So that was probably the biggest news coming out of that WPUTA meeting. The second was that there's a list of, WPUTA has published a list of interim legislative priorities that I will be providing to Kirk. So Kirk, if you can pass that on to the appropriate people. Yep. To make sure that we're in gooseneck step here moving forward into next year. So that's what I have.
Okay. Any other commissioner items?
I will share that Commissioner McKenna and a delegation from the PUD and myself went to Stehekin, and it was my first opportunity to connect with the community as well as to meet Bob, who is phenomenal. If you guys have not, pardon me, what is Bob's last name?
Nielsen.
Nielsen. Okay, he is he's an asset for sure, having him up in Stehekin, but also being able to see our power station and, you know, all the infrastructure up there. It really was important for me, especially tying in with the whole power public benefit that we're looking at. And so thank you for the opportunity. Really appreciate it. Yeah. Our staff did an amazing job, wouldn't you say?
I thought of all the meetings that we've had going up there, listening meetings, that was probably the best organized, best attended. Staff did a great job. I was really happy.
Great.
There weren't a lot of community members, but the ones that were there asked some really important questions, and our team was very responsive, so it was good.
Very good.
Before, it's been kind of a drop-in type of thing, and I don't know if we've ever had any group meetings prior to my time, but this time it was scheduled for a start time, and Tika had people there, and Rebecca had everything just meticulously organized as always, and man, it just, you know, the interaction with everybody there spurred more questions and more comments and more learning. It was really a good meeting.
And I think for those who might be listening, one of the big takeaways for me is we often aren't connected with Stehekin, and so to really understand their needs, and as the demographic is changing there, people are utilizing their cabins more, there's just more of a draw on the power that's available. There are some real challenges facing that community, so it was wonderful to be able to be part of that. And I know we could go on and on, it seems like here, so I'm going to let it go, but I really wanted to make sure that anybody who was listening knew that Stehekin's got a lot of lot on the ball up there.
Great reports. Any other commissioner items? Hearing none, any follow-up on delegation of action items from previous board meeting?
So I didn't have any updates from previous board meetings, and from today it was just we're going to come back with a resolution on the public power benefit modification.
So, and that's item 18.
Oh, and Felicity. So that would be on there, and then Felicity is also going to come back with the PPB projects that are funded by other methods too.
Okay. Super. Is there any additional public comment at this time? Are there any other matters of general business that may necessarily come before the commission before we go into executive session for approximately 150 minutes? I figured out what 2.5 hours was since they put minutes in here. Not. I figured I could. Hearing none, then we will move into executive session to discuss with legal counsel agency enforcement actions, litigation, potential litigation to which the district or its board is or is likely to become a party, and or legal risks as authorized by the RSCWs, to consider the selection of a site or the acquisition of real estate by lease or purchase when public knowledge regarding such consideration would cause a likelihood of increased price as authorized by the RCWs, and to consider information regarding the infrastructure and security of computer and telecommunications networks, security and service recovery plans, security risk assessments, and security test results to the extent that they identify specific system vulnerabilities pursuant to the RCWs for approximately 150 minutes. With that, we will move into executive session. We're coming out of executive session. We have been in executive session for 2.5 hours. No votes were taken. No decisions were made. Is there any other business to come before the commission? Hearing none, we stand adjourned.